This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, it is time to go out to Omaha, Nebraska. Mike Rooney will have great coverage for us here on ACC Network. He knows all. We love having him on the program. And the fact he's already done the Drover once, we'll get that breakdown as well. Mike, first of all, good morning. And here we are on the eve of big-time baseball. It's the coolest event, and you know what? I keep saying it. You just cannot backdoor your way to Omaha. These teams have earned it, and when you talk about a team like NC State, boy, they have done it the hard way, haven't they? Ruston, Louisiana, tough environment. They sweep a Louisiana Tech on the road, and then they did the ultimate wow of this tournament so far. They slay number one Arkansas after losing the first one 21-2. NC State's been a remarkable story.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys, the comp I'd give you for NC State college baseball-wise is, if you remember in 2008 when Fresno State won the whole thing, they won a super regional at Arizona State. And this Arizona State team was ridiculous. You know, Ike Davis, Brett Wallace had won the Pac-12 Triple Crown 2 years in a row. Jason Kipnis, I mean, Mike Leake, tons of big leaguers on that team. And Arizona State blew Fresno State's doors off the first night. And then Fresno beat them the next two. And then, you know, you just get on that roll and the best team's behind you. And, you know, next thing you know, we got the Wonder Dogs and Fresno State's won a national title. And I'm not saying I'm picking NC State, but I'm saying every time I look at my bracket, that name keeps jumping out at me. And, you know, I think the other thing, guys, is NC State's kind of built for this tournament. They don't have a lot of pitching, but when you get out to Omaha, you don't need a lot of pitching because it's a longer tournament and you've got some off days baked in there. So, yeah, I think, Pac, what you said is spot on. NC State has gone in the front door. They're as hot as any team that we've got out here. And this is a really talented group.
Mike, when we look at the Wolfpack tomorrow, though, against Stanford, there's a lot of things. I mean, Stanford was impressive. They went to Lubbock and housed them. I mean, it wasn't it wasn't just winning. It was impressive. And Lubbock, you know, the Red Raiders don't fall much at home. So what is it about Stanford tomorrow that should be NC State's biggest concern?
Yeah, it's so funny, Wes. These two teams are super similar where, you know, they both went to super regional atmospheres that they were given no chance in. And I think what the thing you got to worry about with Stanford, they're a little ahead of schedule. This is a very young team. They start six freshmen of the first or second year variety. The other thing that you guys are going to kick out of with Stanford is if you're picturing the kind of geeky kids with the pocket protectors, you need to get that out of your brains right now. Like, they are massive. They are super physical. And their best player, their center fielder, Brock Jones, I mean, 6'1", 215 pounds. He's a full scholarship football player as a defensive back. He's a bad dude. I mean, this dude is not somebody you'd want angry with you. That said, Stanford is even more thin on the mound than NC State. What they do have, though, is they've got two guys on the front end. Brendan Beck is who NC State will face. He's your vintage West Coast guy. He is going to paint the fastball down and away. He throws two different breaking balls anytime he wants. So if you're NC State, you've got to have a really good plan for Brendan Beck. And the plan's got to start early in the game. You're not going to have a lot of time to get the nerves out or get used to him. Because if you do that, you'll blink and it'll be the seventh inning.
Since we've gone to the flat seam baseball, 88 home runs in the last 80 games at TD Ameritrade. Both of these teams like to pound the baseball. Stanford led the Pac-12 in home runs. We know about NC State's power, and it's multiple guys that can do it. Given the ballpark, Mike, given the potential weather conditions, does it help? Does it hinder? Is it a wash? You tell me in terms of the long ball with this series and maybe for everybody this week in Omaha.
Yeah, I would say I think we're going to break the home run record for TD Ameritrade Park this week. We've already shattered the NCAA tournament record that we have. The ball is jumping. There, you know, I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I've enjoyed this immensely, but there's something going on with the baseball. I mean, it is. I get it. The kids are bigger, stronger, faster, but we have hit an insane number of home runs in the regional and super regional round. And so, even that said, though, if the wind is howling in at TD Ameritrade and is a very big ballpark, I don't think you can win here home run only. But I do think the home run will be part of the College World Series this year. I think we will break that record. But again, for NC State, speaking of them specifically, they are a very complete team. I mean, this is a position player group that is super athletic and plays elite defense. They can run. They hit for power. I think NC State likes any kind of party when you can get their position player group involved. So I think they'll be just fine.
Well, and here's the other thing too, Mike, and we talked with Elliot about this earlier in the week on the show. He's developed the Villamans. He's developed the Justices. Those guys have now come along from a pitching perspective. While the word, and I agree with you, they're thinner in that particular area of their team. But now all of a sudden, you got some guys that have some true, meaningful postseason experience by virtue of what's going on in Ruston and what's going on in Fayetteville. And now you get immediate reaction to it, immediate response to it. I think that's an advantage that not a lot of people have talked about this week.
Yeah, and I'll tell you guys, I think it's an advantage that caused Dave Van Horn to start Kevin Copps instead of using him in the bullpen. I'm telling you guys, I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but NC State's an intimidating scouting report because the position player group is really old and really talented. And then, you know, if I'm facing NC State right now with the way Justice and Villamin are throwing, I mean, Villamin's throwing 96 from the left side and it's explosive stuff. And Justice is throwing just as hard with that funky Sid Fernandez arm slot. I mean, the ball just explodes out of his jersey. And so you guys think about it. If you're facing NC State and you're trying to contain that offense, and you're also thinking, hey, if we're down 1 or 2 nothing in the fifth inning, it's getting pretty dark around here because now I'm going to deal with Villamin and Justice for 6 outs each. That's not a good feeling. So, yeah, NC State is, they are who they are on the mound. We get that. But, boy, they're an exciting team right now.
By the way, for the record,
I got to tell you, Pack, the fact that Rooney just mentioned Sid Fernandez, he just jumped to the top of the guest list. Right. I mean, let's be honest. We had John Mita Parrell reference the Matt Dillon movie Flamingo Kid in the first hour. Ooh, Rooney just doubled movie. That and topped him with Sid Fernandez. Don't you agree?
Well, you know, as a Giants guy, I'm kind of going to be neutral on that a little bit, but that's beside the point. That's beside the point.
Flamingo Kid is good. That's a strong reference.
Here you go. By the way, for the record, 381 home runs in 123 games so far in the NCAA baseball tournament. There's your number. I saw that in an AP story this morning. 381.
That's pretty awesome.
That's a big number.
Yeah. It's a big number.
That's a large number. Let me go to the other side. Here comes Virginia. Lost the first game in the regional on the road. No problem. Lost the first game, the super regional. No problem. They are really grinding, aren't they? I mean, this is a team that just knows how to win, Mike. And to me, both NC State and Virginia, they didn't play a single home game to get to Omaha, and here they are. To me, that mental toughness cannot hurt you when you get to the weekend. Virginia opens up against a Tennessee team that been knocking it all over the place. They had 16 home runs in their 5 tournament games so far. But what about the Hoos big picture? Is it to remind you of their 2015 run?
Yeah, I would say what you said a second ago, Pack, is spot on for Virginia. What I like most about this team is the resiliency. You know, this is a team that the toughness, that this is the scariest team you could ever face in the postseason where there's talent, obviously, right? This was a preseason top 15 team, but they've had so much adversity during the course of the season that, and they've overcome all of it. And so now you're facing a team that no matter what plays out during the game, they feel like it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. They feel like there's nothing they can't overcome. That's a scary team. I'll tell you the other thing I really like about Virginia, besides a position player group with immense toughness, is the pitching staff. You know, you could make an argument that it's the deepest pitching staff that's in this tournament. So, you know, Virginia's position player group maybe isn't as sexy as some of the other ones, although I would say that Zach Geloff fits in any lineup we have out here. Kyle Teal has really changed the equation for Virginia's offense. He's been a real difference maker. But they've got bullpen depth. I mean, think about it, guys. In the Super Regional, Stephen Schock didn't even pitch, to my knowledge. I mean, that's how much depth they were able to run through. And so, Griff McGarry was so good last week. He has been susceptible to the walk. You cannot walk people in the stadium. That's one thing you can't do in Omaha. But, you know, Virginia, because of their pitching depth, apparently the loser's bracket is their home. And they can get there and come all the way through, and it's no problem.
All right, but Mike, here's the thing. The Vols struck me as maybe, and I know Stanford did what they did, Arizona did what they did out west, and maybe some of us in this part of the country missed that. What Tennessee did last weekend, though, to LSU, that was a pretty strong statement about where they are right now. And you know this as well as I do. This is coming at a time when Tony Vitello's name is starting to get beat around here for jobs, most notably in Baton Rouge and other places. I mean, timing is everything in Knoxville right now, it seems like.
Yes. Yeah. You're right, Wes. Like the administrators in Knoxville hopefully have picked out the pen. They're going to be writing some checks to Tony Vitello and Tennessee baseball. There's a lot of talk of salary increases and stadium upgrades. But, you know, hey, these kids have earned it. And Tony Vitello and his staff have earned it. And I will tell you that I agree with the point. Virginia, as much as I like this club, this is a very, very difficult assignment. Tennessee is outstanding. I think it's the best infield group that we have in this tournament. You know, kids that are really offensive, that defend at a high level. They've got just enough pitching. They've got an elite. They've got like kind of a high leverage reliever that you want in these things. And Sean Hundley, they play with an extreme edge. I don't think that really matters as much in Omaha because all these teams are so mature, but you know, Tennessee, they're edgy. They're not coming to make friends and shake hands with you. This is I would if I had to give you a stretch analogy, Tennessee baseball reminds me a little bit of, you know, the U in football back in the heyday where it seems like every game there's jawing and angst and they love that kind of party. You know, that they're into that. And so, you know, the one thing I'll tell you, though, is Tennessee probably has the most extreme environment change of any of these eight teams. Going from there, we were teasing Lindsey Nelson Stadium, their home park, and we were calling it hashtag Schmedium because it was playing so small during the regional and super regional rounds. So Tennessee's going to have to make a quick adjustment to that, but they do have a very good team.
All right. That actually plays to my next question. Mark has talked about this. This is the best national championship year in and year out because of Omaha, because of the stakes and everything that's involved in it. And I think it's just wildly entertaining. And like Pac said, you could start tomorrow at 2:00, go all the way through the evening and really enjoy yourself and enjoy college baseball. We've talked about the home runs here. You were involved in college baseball as a coach, I believe, when we had the +5 ratio bats. And balls were jumping out, and we were looking at 28 runs a game, 20-some runs in a College World Series game, and people were talking about, well, this is like wiffle ball. That's all this is. Now we've gotten to another point where Pac just gave that huge stat of the number of home runs that have been hit in the NCAA tournament. You say there may be something with the ball. The college game tends to tinker with this a little bit more than most. In your mind, what do we have to tinker with next? Is it the ratio of the bat again? Is it the way the ball's wound? You and I both know the seams got reduced a few years ago when we were too low scoring. Now we're high scoring. Balls are flying out. What's the answer in your mind?
Yeah, I actually think I like where we're at right now. You know, we had lost so much offense a few years ago. I actually, if we could, you know, and you can't, but if we could freeze it right here, I'm actually good with this. You know, we're getting home runs are back. But actually, scoring has not jumped up significantly where we're at risk of these 21-14 games. I just think we got to a point back in the -5 era where, you know, we were recruiting DHs and putting gloves on them. And, you know, it was just that's really what we had gotten to. That's not what you're going to see over the next 14 days. You know, these are teams that really defend. I just think the ball is jumping. So, you know, I know there's not a freeze button, but if there was, I've enjoyed our postseason tremendously right now. If we could leave it right there, I love this brand that we're playing.
Mike, I want to switch gears with you real quick. I mean, obviously here on ACC Network, we're going to concentrate on the two ACC teams that are in play Saturday and Sunday. I want to ask you about the other two games because Vanderbilt, Arizona is, you know, you mentioned how NC State and Stanford are so similar in terms of their makeup, power, and all that stuff. The second game tomorrow with Vandy and Arizona are polar opposites. I mean, Arizona can score, and Vandy can really pitch. And so a total contrast of styles. And I think as a fan, you love the fact that the two games you get tomorrow are two totally different fights really totally opposite fights. So what do you like about Vandy in Arizona tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I think Vandy is that's the pedigree team, right? Like, they're the defending champions, and you know, they're on a real roll under Tim Corbin. And you know, they've got the two stars in Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker. And, you know, I've encouraged anybody that's kind of they're dabbling in college baseball as a fan, or they're kind of going to wet their whistle over the next 2 weeks. Hey, you got to check Vandy out. I mean, Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, these are not kids that are going to just get to the big leagues and get a cup of coffee. We think they're going to pitch in all-star games. I mean, these are generational talents. We have not had two talents like this in college baseball on the same team since Garrett Cole and Trevor Bauer pitched for UCLA from 2009 to 2011. Wow. So, you know, and Vandy is certainly not void of other great players. I mean, they're recruiting at the highest level in college baseball right now. You mentioned Arizona. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. This is Jay Johnson. He's been the head coach at Arizona since 2016. This is his second trip to Omaha. And last time he was here, he took him to game three of the finals. And, you know, I guess if I was going to give you an analogy on Arizona's offense, I mean, it's kind of like Loyola Marymount basketball, where it's just relentless. You know, they just keep coming. They drive pitch counts up. They're you know, if I'm a pitcher, they're very annoying. I mean, it's 1 through 9. They never, you know, so many times in college baseball, we see a younger hitter just kind of give a bat away, right? Like, you throw an 0-0 breaking ball that's a bad pitch and they, you know, pop out or whatever. Arizona just literally never does that. If they have a really cool t-shirt that their hitters wear that say it's a ball or it's a line drive. You know, meaning if it's a strike, it's going to be a line drive. It's really cool. And it's a brilliant description of their team. Yeah, their offense is really fun to watch. And hey, I'll tell you guys, their stars are true freshmen. Jacob Berry and Daniel Susak are true freshmen. Berry's got 70 RBIs. I mean, how do you do that as a true freshman? I couldn't even get to my classroom buildings as a true freshman, let alone driving 70 runs.
All right, at Sunday's game, real quick, Texas, Mississippi State.
Yeah, really good pitching. You know, Texas is a very complete team. Mississippi State, the highest velocity pitching staff we have here. The K per nine off the chart. Landon Sims is a, you know, reliever throwing 97 with a wicked slider. Tons of pitching in that game.
Yeah, going to be good stuff. Listen, right, we appreciate you getting up with us. And stay dry. Enjoy the steaks. I know you already have. I'm jealous. That's jealous, right. jealous. But the baseball is going to be tremendous this weekend and all next week.
Thanks, boys. Good to see you.
Yep, you too. Mike Rooney, always a pleasure, and delighted to have him, Danny Graves, and Kelsey Riggs as part of our coverage live from Omaha right here on ACC Network. And it starts tomorrow night with a late night edition of All ACC from TD Ameritrade with Kelsey, Coach Rooney, Danny Graves reacting to NC State Stanford, and get you ready for Virginia Tennessee on Sunday. Our coverage from Omaha starts at 11 with All ACC right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. When we continue, Two-A-Days continues. Alan Saunders covers Pittsburgh for Pittsburgh Sports Now. Been with us before. We'll get his thoughts as Pat Narduzzi's team gets ready for what could be an interesting ride this fall. That's next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. All right, we just got done breaking down the College World Series for you. Part of our Two-A-Days in football continues. We had John Mita Perel talking a little BC football earlier. Now we go to Pittsburgh, where Alan Saunders of Pittsburgh Sports Now joins us. And he is back for more. Alan, first of all, good seeing you again. And kind of got a funny feeling that Pitt fans are going to be excited. Kenny Pickett's back, and it looks like a team that offensively should be able to score a ton of points.
Yeah, I think Pitt's probably the only team in the country with a fifth-year returning starting quarterback. I was pretty surprised when Kenny Pickett decided to come back, and it's a big thing for Pitt fans and the program to have a guy with that kind of experience coming back. I really think it's hard to put into words what that means for a team. We always talk about, you know, oh, well, they have a freshman or it's a young team and they're going to struggle. When you have a guy who's played as many games as he has. And that Miami game where he dove to the pylon was now 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So, you know, to have that experience, I think, is really huge for the entire offense, because Mark Whipple likes to throw the ball. So a lot of it does ride on the quarterback. And Kenny Pickett's going to be a big difference maker for this team this year. Having him back is huge. And, yeah, I think that alone should give some excitement to this season. And I think the early part of the schedule sets up for what should be a pretty exciting fall for Pitt fans, I think. I think we could be headed into a good place for them in the early part of the season.
You know, Alan, here's the other thing, too. And, you know, there's a lot about Pat Narduzzi that personifies Pittsburgh, right? I mean, he's a really good fit there for a lot of reasons. But one is, he's not scared to tell you about what the development of their football program's been like. I mean, he turns all the cards over for you, right? I mean, those press conferences sometimes are like dialogues with you guys in the room. I mean, and it's wildly entertaining. But now he's kind of got the proof in the pudding. I mean, they've developed things on offense. They've developed things on defense. Had another school lost the capable players that Rashad Weaver and Patrick Jones were, there'd be panic everywhere. Well, you know what? Yesterday on social media, they pump out there that Kalijah Cansey is a Walter Camp preseason All-America. I mean, okay, so there is proof right there. Savassier Dennis at linebacker. I mean, do you get the sense that that Narduzzi has settled in here, and what we're getting ready to see is the hard work of the last few years pay off this fall?
I think on defense, absolutely. I you know, when you look at what they did with Rashad Weaver and Patrick Jones, Jalen, you know, those weren't guys that were super high level recruits coming into the program. They weren't these crazy high, you know, 4-5 star kids. That they were unheralded, and they developed them into really, really, really good players. And when you can do that, I think that reduces the panic level when guys leave. They've got guys like Deslin Alexander, who was on the Lott Impact Trophy watch list as well this week. John Morgan out of Washington, D.C. Haba Baldonado, who's a super interesting guy. He's from Rome. He played 1 year of American college football, high school football before coming to Pitt. He's going to be another speed rusher on that edge. They're just going to reload. And then you look forward. Now they've started to get some better recruits. They've got Deion Hayes, who was a high 4-star recruit from here in Pittsburgh. They've got Elliot Donald coming in, Aaron Donald's nephew, who's going to play defensive tackle. And so when you think about what they were able to do with some lightly regarded guys coming out of high school, and now you think about what that group could do with Pat Narduzzi, Randy Bates, and Charlie Partridge, now they've got their hands on some guys that were more well-regarded. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's panic about losing those guys on this defense. I think there's anticipation about what's next for this group going forward.
Alan, I want to get back to the offense. We know about Kenny Pickett, a lot of guys back on the offensive line, really good wide receivers. But can Pitt get better in running the football? That was a problem last year. And looking forward, if you're going to be a complete team and really have a breakthrough kind of year, you got to be able to do all things. And if everybody knows Kenny Pickett can throw it all over the yard, okay, good. We're trying to take that away from you. Can you run the football? Can Pitt run the ball?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to be a team that features the run like some other teams do. We've seen that from Mark Whipple throughout his career, wherever he's been. They're going to throw the ball. I think the key is they need to be able to run the ball when they have to run the ball. They have to be better in short yardage and goal line situations. They've got to be able to put those drives together where they can put a team away in the second half when they have a lead. And they weren't really able to do that last year. I think part of it has to be the offensive line. I don't think they were good enough blocking last year. And they've got they lost Jimmy Morrison. They lost Bryce Hargrove. So that they do have some question marks there. I think Owen Drexel's a guy that could step up. They got Marcus Miner, a transfer from Maryland. So there's talent there. They just need to play better. They need to block better. And, you know, the running backs, I think Israel Abanaconda from Brooklyn, he was a freshman last year, he'll be a sophomore. I think they really like him. I think they're hoping that he can turn into a complete three-down back. He had some pass protection issues last year. That's common for a freshman. But if he can turn into that complete player, I think they like him a lot. He has breakaway speed and some decent size as well. But, yeah, I think that's the – if you look at the entire team, I think that's the big question mark. Will they be able to run the football? Right. Because if they can, I don't see any big issues with this team.
All right, Alan, here's the question. I want to jump to the schedule here because I think September 11 is a chance for Pitt to kind of write their name nationally because they're going to go to Knoxville, play Tennessee. We all know that Josh Heupel and Pat Narduzzi have had the UCF-Pitt series, so there is a degree of familiarity with this. But I think that's an early chance for the Panthers to deliver a message on the road, regardless of what you think of Tennessee, the fact they're going to an SEC venue to play. They get a win, deliver a message there, then they got a chance, much like we talked with John Mitoparel earlier in the show about BC, there's a chance to kind of work your way into the national point of conversation, at least on the back end early in the year.
Yeah, it's an absolutely huge game for the reasons you mentioned. And, you know, Josh Heupel carved up Pitt in that first meeting between Pitt and UCF down in Orlando. And I'm not sure what to make of this Tennessee team. They have, I believe they have the most players in the transfer portal of any Correct. Power Five school. And so it's a bit of an unknown, but I know that Josh Heupel's a really good coach and, you know, he has that going for him. But yeah, if Pitt can win that game, it's big. And the rest of their non-conference schedule is not super threatening. They've got UMass, Western Michigan, and New Hampshire at home. If they win that game, it's really easy to see them going into the early part of this ACC schedule with a lot of momentum. And, you know, they've got the tougher games of their ACC slate at home, too. They've got Clemson coming to Pittsburgh. They've got Miami coming to Pittsburgh. They've got North Carolina coming to Pittsburgh. And so I really think, I mean, listen, those are tough games. Those are going to be challenges for this Pitt team. But I think the schedule, if they can win that Tennessee game, the early part of the schedule looks really nice for the Panthers and really a chance to, yeah, get in the national conversation and build some excitement for this team.
Alan, you read my mind. If going to Tennessee to play would be really hard if this was the year 2001, it's 2021. I mean, Tennessee hadn't been worth a damn in 15 years. So I expect Pitt to go to Knoxville and go, yeah, it's real cute. I love that fight song. Now, let's just go beat your brains in. Now, Tennessee's not any good. But I do think, though, what you mentioned with the conference games at home is the key. And you just said it. Clemson's at home, Miami's at home, North Carolina's at home. And I think I expect Pitt to get off to a good start. But beginning October 23rd, I think that whole stretch of those three, the next four, you know, going to Wallace Wade Outdoor, Pitt should be better than Duke. But Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, to me, kind of decides where Pitt is in the pecking order in the big picture. Because I do expect them in the first half of the season to get off to a good start and get people fired up about them.
I agree, and you know, Miami's a team that's given them trouble over the years. Clemson, although Pitt probably feels just as good as anybody facing that team. Right. Not too many schools with a win in recent memory. But I think two things. I think, yeah, if they can win one or two of those games, they can put themselves in an ACC title, you know, ACC championship game position. And if the big thing for me also, though, is if they lose those three games, I don't think there's really any shame in that if you're the Pitt program, if they can take care of business. This is a team that over the years has had some really good wins and has also tripped up against some lesser teams, those games where you looked at the schedule in June and said, well, they should win that one. So I think it's two things. Yeah, they can get themselves into serious championship competition if they win one of those games or two of those games. But they also need to take care of business and make those games that meaningful. Right. And then if they do that and they lose those games, they're still looking at an 9-3, 8-4 kind of season, still going to a really good bowl, and everybody will be feeling good. I think the angst that has come from some of the seasons here in Pittsburgh has been, you know, those seasons where they had some good wins but also had some really bad losses. And so, yeah, I think that those are the three big games on the schedule also, but it's not just about those. Pitt needs to take care of business and make those three games really mean the most they can.
All right, I'm going to ask you the same question here from me at the end that I asked John Mitoparel at BC. Plenty of optimism with the two schools we've talked today. Plenty of optimism about players coming back, the schedule, all sorts of things. What's your biggest concern on June the 18th?
I think my biggest concern for Pitt, and you know, we just talked about it, is the ability to run the ball. I think it was such a huge and the offensive line in general, because let's be honest, they didn't protect Kenny Pickett very well last year. He gets hurt, and then Joey Yellen, who was less mobile than Kenny Pickett, came in and really struggled. And so I think the offensive line in general, to me, is the biggest question mark on this team. I think they have talented players, but it didn't work very well last year. And the combination of not being able to run the ball and not being able to protect the quarterback is what really prevented last season from being a better season than it was. And if they don't get that fixed, I think it's going to be what leads to another disappointing season this year. So I think that's absolutely the biggest question mark, the thing that should have the Pitt coaching staff worried. But I think they also have a lot of positives. And so, yeah, I think it's a solid outlook right now, but that's definitely a concerning question mark, because if that goes badly, it can really make it difficult to run any kind of offense, let alone what Pitt wants to do with the passing game.
All right. Alan Saunders covers the Panthers for Pittsburgh Sports Now. Great to see you. Be well. Look forward to seeing you soon, Alan. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. Don't forget, our coverage of ACC football goes into overdrive on Wednesday, July 21st. From the fabulous Westin in Uptown Charlotte pack, wall-to-wall coverage of the Atlantic Coast Conference football kickoff. Wednesday, July 21st, Thursday, July 22nd. Minute-by-minute coverage pack on one of the biggest seasons ever of ACC football is for you here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, we have some breaking news, by the way, in this 9 o'clock hour from the National Collegiate Athletic Association. And what if I told you? All on Packer News.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. A lot of good guests, a lot of good insight. Get you ready for a little baseball this weekend with NC State and Virginia in Omaha. 2 days today with Pitt and BC, two teams that are really thinking that, hey, you know what? The ball bounces just right. We can have ourselves a big-time year. Pitt's had, 11 straight years of five losses or more. I think they can break that. BC's looking for the threshold of reaching eight wins for the first time since, 2008, 2009? I think they can do that, too. Those are two teams to keep an eye on. I know there'll be a lot of love for Clemson, obviously. North Carolina, a lot of hype. Miami, NC State. But those two teams today that we talked about, Wes, could be some surprise teams, both of them.
Monday's show, by the way, two-a-days feature NC State, North Carolina. How about that? Coming for you Monday on the Packer and Durham program. We're going to get to Packers bar bet here in just a minute that may surprise you. Darren Heitner, who teaches sports law at the University of Florida, has followed name, image, and likeness, has just said the NCAA has officially pulled the plug on having a third-party administrator to review name, image, and likeness deals for college athletes. Remember, the NCAA, 10 days ago, made a big deal out of having a third-party administrator that was going to review name, image, and likeness. Remember, yesterday, went to Capitol Hill. It turned into name, image, and likeness, plus about five or six other things in front of that congressional hearing committee. So now Darren Heitner is saying this morning the NCAA's pulled the plug on a third-party administrator. I guess, in short, we're going to go to July 1 and not have anything from the National Collegiate Athletic Association. Not that we expected it, but you will be kind of benevolent to the state law of your participating institution. How's that? And that's where we're going to start name, image, and likeness in a handful of states on July 1 in the United States of America.
How many meetings and subcommittee meetings and donuts were consumed to get to a third party for them to reach that stage to say, here's the direction we want to go? How many months and months and months did that take? And I heard they go fake left, go right. It's a clown show. I tell you? It is a total clown show, and it starts at the very top with the guy with the big red nose. I mean, come on. Enough. It's just – all right. There's nothing else to say here.
They could have waited till 5 o'clock on a Friday, and it would have surprised me less. The surprise is it's before 10 a.m., to be honest with you, on a Friday.
Move on.
All right. The Packer and Durham bar bet for your weekend. We had Carson Palmquist on here earlier. He and Matthew Nelson were first-team All-Americans by the American or National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association. Okay? That was the last of the sports in the 21-22 academic calendar to name its All-American team. With Palmquist and Nelson being honored, that means the ACC had All-Americans, first-team All-Americans in all but two sports. What's going to surprise you is the two sports that didn't have first-team All-Americans.
One in particular.
Volleyball, Kayla Lund, Pittsburgh, second team. Men's basketball. No first, no second, no third.
First time ever since dirt, since hardwood, since peach baskets. I don't want to sound the alarm, but I'm going to. This transfer portal, I have not kept up with it on purpose. I kept telling you, let me know what your roster looks like in October. The ACC last year, we would all admit, based on our standards, was a little down. Yep. A little down. No question. Hey, when you don't have an All-America player, first team, second team, third team for the first time ever, it kind of told you that. I don't know what these rosters are going to look like, Wes. We're going through a transition with, you know, Roy Williams retiring, Mike Krzyzewski announcing he's got one more year. It's a transition with the league from a coaching perspective. I mean, you know, those are all-time greats we're talking about. Talent-wise, on the hardwood, when you start saying, hey, are we ready to compete for national titles? We will see. Again, I'm going to wait till October, November, when you let me know what a roster looks like. But this is a transitionary period for men's basketball in the Atlantic Coast Conference, without a doubt. We are watching it take place right in front of our very eyes. So just prepare yourself. But that bar bet right there, you will impress your friends with that, because I'm going to tell you something. Most folks would not know that men's basketball pitched a shutout in that question. Yep. Most would not know that.
There you go. There's your Packer and Durham bar bet for the weekend.
Yep.
Right there. Every sport except volleyball and men's basketball, first team All-America. We'll take a break. One stat per game coming up for NC State, Stanford, and Virginia, Tennessee from the College World Series, which starts tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern on ESPN with the Wolfpack and Stanford. We'll do that next as we wrap the week with Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, final segment of the week. And again, happy Father's Day weekend to all the guys out there. Celebrate like rock stars, right? Become the beast of bourbon. That's what I'm talking about. Beast of bourbon. That's what you do this weekend. You'll be good to go. Thank me later.
Unbelievable.
Love it.
Yeah. How about one stat per game before we say goodbye, right? How about let's get into one stat per game. College World Series style. 2 o'clock tomorrow, NC State and Stanford. Tom Hart, Chris Burke, Ben McDonald, Chris Budden will be there for our coverage. That's on ESPN, by the way. NC State has six players with double-digit homers. Tyler McDonough, 15. Luca Tresh, 15. Johnny Butler, 13. Devontae Brown, 12. Terrell Tatum, 11. Jose Torres, 10. Now remember the 10th in Fayetteville for a long time. Tied with Arkansas for the most in the nation. Mr. Packer?
Yeah, well, Arkansas's number is going to stay right where it is because they're on the couch watching NC State this weekend. Big ballpark. Again, both teams are explosive in that first game tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Yep. Grab your popcorn, ladies and gentlemen. NC State and Stanford, and they are very similar. You've heard that from all of our experts this week. Those two teams are almost identical in terms of the way they like to attack, with quality depth, enough pitching to be dangerous, and off to the races you go. Wish Elliott Avent the very best.
Yep. Virginia, Tennessee is Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock on ESPN2. Again, the trio of Hart, Burke, and McDonald will be there for the call for you over on the Deuce. The Cavaliers have won the opening game in each of their past three College World Series appearances. They've won multiple games in three of their four CWS trips. So that's a good sign. That's a heck of a task on Sunday now for Virginia.
In Tennessee, as Mike Rooney says, probably talks more trash than anybody there. First-time Vols have been back since 05. They got a lot of swagger, and they are very talented. As I mentioned earlier, 16 home runs they hit in their five NCAA tournament games. However, all of those were at their comfortable little stadium. So this is a different ballpark, mm-hmm. and Abbott goes for the Hoos. Again, they're just grinders. They just kind of figure out ways to win. And Virginia hopes that, much like in 2015 when they rolled into Omaha, they find ways to win. But that will be a very, very difficult task on Sunday afternoon.
Yep. Good luck to the Cavaliers. Good luck to the Wolfpack. Full review on Monday's edition of Packer and Durham, along with the two-a-days with the Heels and the Pack from the Triangle of North Carolina. Very quickly, round two of the United States Open, 121st edition, Mark, getting underway here shortly at Torrey Pines. And Brooks Koepka, fighting Seminole, is the best among the ACC alums, tied for fifth. Koepka looked good yesterday. Looked good going around the Torrey Pines track at 7,600 yards in a par 71.
You know, he always seems to look good when it's a major golf championship. He is mentally tough, physically tough. He just knows the way to golf his ball in a major. And you better keep it in the fairway, and you better make every five-footer you look at, because guess what? You may have a few of those for pars. whether you're at Torrey Pines or anywhere else. But he's kind of built for the majors, and I think he gears his game up, Wes. He plays better in the biggest moment. So it's you get a sense that, in all likelihood, he'll be a factor this weekend. I just hope that maybe if we can get Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka in the same pairing, that would be awesome for the weekend. DeChambeau yesterday video bombed him during an interview yesterday to keep up their little feud. But I don't know if that's been prearranged or not, but it makes for a fun copy and interesting dialogue. As if you're a golf fan, those two, I just would love to see those guys paired together this weekend. That'd be great.
Yeah, you're fight promoting for sure, but that's good. I like that.
Same. Good for the game.
All right, Caesar's Sportsbook by William Hill has set some win totals. Clemson is at 11.5, tied with Alabama for most projected wins in the country.
That basically means you're not allowed to hiccup, right? Whether it be Georgia or Pitt or anything else, you got to run the table. Good luck. And listen, last couple years, we've seen teams win the national championship with a zero in the loss column. We've seen Clemson do it. We've seen LSU do it. We've seen Alabama do it. Can somebody do it again in 21? We're going to find out. But Clemson's got a pretty good shot to pull it off, if anybody.
North Carolina's win total, by the way, set by those good folks in Clark County, Nevada, at 10. Thoughts?
I think North Carolina can get to 10. I do. I don't think that one. Again, 11.5 for Clemson means you just can't lose a game. That's tough for. I don't care if it's Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, fill in the blank. That's hard to do. 10, I think, is more manageable for North Carolina, to be honest with you. I think they could stub their toe once or twice and go double digits on you. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think they're that talented.
Final note on this Friday as we head to Father's Day weekend. Yesterday, Dan Radakovich joined us to exclusively announce on Packer and Durham that Clemson was adding women's lacrosse and women's gymnastics to their roster of sports. Well, it got a lot of movement, not just because it happened on Packer and Durham. It got a lot of movement, including Simone Biles, the Olympic champion, who said, "Oh, look, you guys need help? I know some people." Now, we're far from telling Jim Clements and Dan Radakovich how to do their jobs, but back, I think I might find out what Simone's got in mind, wouldn't you?
Be worth the phone call. I mean, What? I mean, 5 minutes of your time. She's an incredible talent. But I guarantee you, like I said, Dan Radakovich probably had a few resumes across his desk yesterday after that announcement. And that's cool. It's great for the league. Yeah. It's great for Clemson.
Thanks to Josh Macri for a great week. Commander Cody also helped us out. We appreciate that. Chrissy Velez directs this program flawlessly. We always appreciate her time. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. Happy Father's Day and happy 10K to Pack and Mrs. P. We'll see you Monday morning at 7 a.m.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.